The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Good morning. So this morning I wanted to follow on a little bit from what we talked about last week, which was working with thoughts and meditation. But today I'm going to talk about working with thoughts in daily life. So it's a slightly different spin on the topic. In one of the Buddha's discourses, he mentioned that in his meditation practice, before he was enlightened, he noticed that there were two kinds of thought that he could kind of distinguish between. He said he noticed that there were thoughts that were about sense desire, ill will, and cruelty that he could put on one side, and that when he thought thoughts like that, when there were thoughts like that in his mind, that it tended to lead to some kind of suffering. It led to some kind of affliction, either for himself or for others, or for both. And on the other side, he recognized there were thoughts of renunciation or letting go of the wish to hold on to sense pleasures or get rid of unpleasant experience. So he noticed that there were thoughts of renunciation, thoughts of non-ill will and non-cruelty, which we could rephrase as thoughts of kindness and thoughts of compassion. And when he had thoughts like that, he said, I saw that there was no harm, no affliction to anyone. He said, I saw that I could think a thought like that and it wouldn't cause anybody any harm. I could think it all day and all night and nobody would come to harm. So this gives us a kind of a basic criteria for kind of looking at our thoughts and checking in to our thoughts in daily life. What kinds of thoughts are helpful for us? What kinds of thoughts lead to our happiness? What kind of thoughts lead to affliction? Both, again, both for ourselves and others. In this sutta, essentially what he was doing when he recognized that he was thinking these thoughts of ill will, of cruelty, of sense desire, when he contemplated that this leads to suffering, this leads to suffering either for myself or for others, leads to affliction is the word that's used in the sutta, or the translation of the word that's used in the sutta. When it leads to affliction. And he said, as I recognized that it led to affliction, those thoughts tended to subside. So this gives us a way to check in, you know, to actually, this is a little instruction for us. He's basically contemplating the drawbacks of these unskillful thoughts. And in contemplating those drawbacks, recognizing the unskillfulness of them, that they lead to harm, they lead to suffering, the mind more easily let go of them. On the other side, where he saw they did not lead to affliction, when he was in meditation, he saw that, yes, I can think this thought. It doesn't cause any harm to think these thoughts of kindness, of compassion, of renunciation. And yet in meditation, when I'm thinking thoughts, the mind tends to be agitated, and the agitated mind doesn't settle into concentration. And so, again, he's contemplating the drawbacks of the thoughts in that context. So in our daily lives, this gives us a good kind of first reflection on our thoughts. Are they leading to affliction or are they leading to non-affliction? Are they leading to happiness? Are they supportive of happiness or not? So that can be a kind of our first reflection in our thoughts as we see thoughts coming up in our minds. And seeing them come up, if they are unskillful, contemplating how they're unskillful, recognizing, contemplating, or actually reflecting on the drawbacks of thinking in that way. This is suggested by the Buddha, and we can do this in our daily lives. We can reflect on the drawbacks of certain kinds of thoughts. Another way to reflect on our thoughts is to kind of think of them as internal speech and consider the teachings, the Buddhist teachings on wise speech in how we reflect on our thoughts as a way to support this reflection on is it skillful or unskillful. So the five aspects of wise speech are, we need to refrain from false speech, so is the speech true? Refrain from harsh speech, which is speech designed to hurt in some way, whether through tone of voice or the actual words. Refrain from divisive speech, which is speech intending to create divisions between people. Refrain from, false speech, harsh speech, divisive speech, idle chatter. So there's four kinds. Did I say five? idle chatter is the fourth kind. Refraining from idle chatter, which is basically speech intending to serve no purpose at all. And, gossip, you mentioned gossip. It can fall into one of two categories. It's not particularly... Sometimes we look at gossip as being speaking about somebody who's not here. And that I would not put necessarily into these categories. The intention around gossip may be to cause division. So, we maybe say, do you know what that person did? As a way to cause division, to, shore up connections in this group as opposed to, separating us from that group. So that can be one way that gossip is used. And another way that gossip is used is just as idle chatter, just like, did you know that so-and-so was doing such-and-such? And, idle chatter about movie stars, It's like, do we need to be sharing this information? Is this serving any purpose? So this isn't intending to, I don't intend for this to be a talk on wise speech, but just in terms of reflecting, we speak to ourselves. And often we are speaking to ourselves in these ways, It's amazing to me, hearing thoughts. It seems less so at this point in my life, but, in the earlier part of my practice or before I started practicing, the way I spoke to myself had a lot of harshness to it. You're stupid. You're no good. It had a lot of that. It had a lot of praise as well. I mean, it's like, oh yeah, you know how to do this. You're really good at this. But it's almost like these two identities, It's like I couldn't measure up to that. You're so great all the time. And when I wasn't so great, I was horrible. I was a failure. And this internal language was very harsh. So noticing if your internal speech is... unwise speech? Is it speech that is true? I mean, first of all, this is an interesting thing to reflect on, that some of what we tell ourselves isn't necessarily true. We may not even particularly believe it, but it's coming up in our minds anyway. I'll talk a little bit more about beliefs in a moment. So looking at how we speak to ourselves internally, you know, we in judgment, for example, you know, the way we judge other people, this is something that seems to come up a lot in our minds. You know, what's the purpose of that? Is it serving some kind of shoring up of your own identity? So two other aspects of wise speech that the Buddha mentioned are, is the speech beneficial? And is it timely? Is it an appropriate time for this kind of speech? So given all of these pieces of wise speech, there's kind of three questions, I think, that cover most of the terrain that we can ask ourselves about our internal speech, about our thoughts. Is it true? Is it necessary? And is it kind? So the true covers the aspect of not false. Kind covers not harsh, not divisive. Necessary covers not idle. Kind also covers beneficial. And I think timely is kind of covered under necessary. So we can kind of just, you know, collapse those down into these three. Is it true? Is it necessary? Is it kind? And that's also useful in terms of our speech as well. You know, kind of a quick, you know, three-step reflection. Is it true? Is it necessary? Is it kind? So true. Is it true? You know, this can be a little subtle. I mean, a little more subtle. You know, it's like, if you're judging somebody or thinking a thought about, well, you know, they're doing this because of X, Y, and Z, and there's a judgment that's forming around that. I mean, you may be imputing, notice in your thinking whether you're imputing motivations to people. You know, you may not actually know what their motivations are. You know, you may see some exchange and think that you understand the reason underneath it, but you may not. And so taking care in your internal thoughts to recognize when you are moving in this terrain of assuming what is going on. So, you know, just looking at that. The assumption may be true, but it is an assumption. So you don't necessarily know that it's true until you have done some checking out of that. So, you know, true, checking into. Is this thought true? Necessary. Necessary, I think this is probably one of the biggest areas of our thinking. You know, it's like we think a lot of thoughts that aren't necessary. Our thoughts, you know, they move into, entertainment. You know, we want to entertain ourselves. We just, you know, it's like, just ask yourself from time to time, is this thought necessary? I mean, so much of our thoughts are noise. It's just they're not so useful. They in some ways serve a familiar purpose in a way. Many of our thoughts, if you actually look at your thoughts, you'll see many of your thoughts are, well, they usually have the word I or me in them somewhere. And so they're self-referential. You know, even if you're judging someone, there may be the undertone of, well, I wouldn't do that. You know, they did that. I would never do that. Or, you know, so there can be just, it's almost always these thoughts are self-referential. They are building up the story of me. They are, you know, just telling ourselves, this is who I am, this is what I do, this is what I think, this is what I believe. Over and over again, we're telling ourselves this story. And it's actually not necessary to do this. And it solidifies some beliefs, some views about who we are, what we do, the kind of person that we are, the things we're capable of. And it kind of puts us into a box in a way. It solidifies, reifies, as we tell ourselves, this is who I am, this is who I am, it excludes other possibilities. And we are much more flexible than we give ourselves credit for. Much more we have the capacity to be much more open and responsive and meet situations in kind of a fresh way than we give ourselves credit for. So reflecting on, are your thoughts necessary and kind? You know, kind, you know, this, again, we speak harshly. We often speak harshly to ourselves in our thoughts. We speak harshly to others. So just recognizing this harshness doesn't serve. And again, reflecting on the drawbacks can be helpful, especially around harsh speech. You know, the drawbacks of harsh speech, harsh thought, are that when we think harsh thoughts, we may tend to follow through with harsh action. And that, you know, it's not going to cause harm to another, perhaps, if it doesn't come out in words or in action. But when we are thinking in that way, there is a tendency for us to move in that direction. So just contemplating that. You know, that harshness does tend to impact the way we behave. So in looking at the necessity of thoughts, another question or reflection is, what purpose is this thought serving? Why are we thinking this thought? You know, around judging, that's a very interesting question. You know, what is the purpose of judging? Is it to make yourself feel better about yourself? Is it to, if you're, you know, in our thoughts, we have these conversations, we'll create little worlds of discussion, you know. Is it to somehow, in the judging, it might appear as a conversation with that person, you know, is it to somehow to get a sense of, you know, strength or power of putting them in their place somehow, again, of somehow creating a sense of self, of I can do this, I'm more powerful or something. Or it might be a way to solidify a connection with one person at the expense of another person. So again, reflecting on what is the purpose? You know, what is the purpose of these thoughts? Then there's a bunch of kinds of thoughts that we have that are necessary. You know, that we need to negotiate. We need to negotiate our lives. We need to plan. We need to you know, we need to think about putting gas in our car so that we don't run out of gas on the freeway. You know, it's like in negotiating our daily lives, we need to think. So this moves into this area around, you know, so the thoughts are true, they are necessary. You know, thoughts about gas may not be kind or not kind, but they're necessary. So how do we negotiate with those? And I'm going to put that aside for just a moment and get to that in a moment. And I just want to bring in one other piece in terms of looking at our thoughts. Um, a good reflection, another reflection on our thoughts along the lines of, you know, what is the purpose of this thought, is how much do I believe this thought? You know, what is the belief, or what is the belief associated with the thought? We sometimes assume that because we're thinking something, we believe it. You know, that because a thought has appeared in our mind, we must believe it. It wouldn't have appeared if I didn't believe it. And I've seen in my own experience that this is not necessarily the case. You know, that thoughts kind of can appear, and depending on other things that are going on, there will be more or less belief in that thought. So, for instance, you know, self-judgmental thoughts, I think, can fall into this category, or perhaps judgmental thoughts of others even. I had a very strong pattern of thoughts of self-hatred, and, you know, would frequently tell myself, you know, you're no good, you're a failure, that kind of thought. And then as my meditation started to deepen and I began to recognize that thought could just appear in the mind without any belief associated with it, it's just like, oh, wow, there's a thought. It's just like poof, it's just like it's a habit of thought that just appears. And then the process of belief is a separate process. Sometimes the belief is kind of the ground from which the thoughts spring, and sometimes the thoughts are habits that re-fertilize that ground of belief. If we, you know, take that thought, oh, I'm no good, I'm a failure, and then assume that we believe it because we've thought it, we are reifying, we're fertilizing that belief of I'm no good, I'm a failure. So sometimes thoughts appear in our minds because of habit. And so to just kind of recognize that there's a difference between thought and the belief in the thought. And from time to time, you might check in, well, how much do I believe that thought at this moment? You know, and, you know, I've gotten a lot of sleep, I feel pretty, you know, comfortable, I've had enough food, and a thought appears, and it's like, well, you know, there's that thought, you know, I don't particularly believe that right now. But, you know, I've had an argument with a friend, or, you know, I've not gotten much sleep, and I'm stressed out about all these things I need to do, and that thought appears, and yeah, boy, I'm ready to leap right on that thought and believe it. So, you know, noticing this difference, so just beginning to recognize, I mean, you don't have to believe me that beliefs are a separate process from thinking, but investigate in your own experience. Are there times when certain thoughts appear that you believe them more than others? And what are the conditions that that support your being more balanced around particular thoughts? So, you know, daily life brings so many things at us that it can be really hard to be mindful of our thoughts, of our emotions. Last week I talked about how thoughts and emotions are very intimately connected. That, you know, a thought will appear and, you know, kind of in this way that I was just describing, you know, a thought of you're no good, you're a failure, the belief is associated with that thought. When that belief is strong, then depression tends to result. You know, it's like, oh, I'm no good. So thoughts can generate emotions, and emotions can generate thoughts. And in our meditation, we have an opportunity to explore that dynamic pretty with some space. You know, we have the opportunity to recognize there's a thought, notice the emotion, feel the emotion in the body, see if you can let go of the thoughts for a while and come back in and feel the body. So in our meditation, we have a little more space for navigating this terrain of thoughts. In our daily life, there's a lot less space. I'm sure you've noticed this, you know. You're having a conversation with somebody, and very quickly it moves into, you know, judgmental thoughts, reactivity. You're saying something that, you know, is harsh, and then you see a reaction, and then you, so it's, yeah, you know what it's like. So I just want to point out that it's challenging. It is challenging to do this practice, to work with our thoughts, our emotions in our daily lives. And it's a skill. It needs practice. Now, if you think about how we cultivate skills, let's think about a really, like, you know, interactive skill like basketball. You know, the way you practice basketball isn't to set yourself in the middle of an NBA game, you know, the first time you practice basketball. You know, you're going to get run over. You start by practicing by yourself. You practice for a while. You get familiar with the movements. You learn how to move. You learn how to shoot. And then you maybe bring in a friend or two, and you practice together. You practice certain moves. You know, I've seen basketball teams doing drills. They do the same thing over and over and over again, the same patterns. They practice various patterns. They know what they're doing together. And then they'll do practice games with each other. And then they move into the real game. So, you know, they move from solo practice to structured practice with others to like the real thing. Or maybe a game with friends, and then to the real thing. And so we can think of a kind of a similar pattern in our practice for daily life. You know, getting out there and trying to expect first day that I'm going to be able to be mindful while I'm speaking and talking, while I'm in a meeting with a very charged meeting with my boss and another party, you know, maybe not. But we can practice. And so, you know, following this model, it's helpful to begin to practice when there is less charge, less activity. So start practicing this kind of thing on your own. Practice while you're driving. I mean, driving maybe in a place where there's not a lot of, you know, if it's a clear running freeway, for instance, you know, give yourself that time to practice, you know, noticing, what are your thoughts necessary? Are they true? Are they kind? You know, notice what goes through your mind. Or when you're doing some chores, you know, picking some times of the day where you tend to be alone, you tend to have time, and start looking at your thoughts, looking at them from this perspective of, are they skillful? Are they unskillful? Are they true? Are they necessary? Are they kind? And then perhaps you may want to move into a little more challenging situation. Have a friend that you know well who also knows the practice, and, you know, go out to lunch with them and see if you can practice mindful speech, and in the process, you know, practice reflecting on thinking what you're going to say before you say it. You know the thoughts that are in your mind. Recognize whether the thoughts. So, you know, when we're in a conversation, there's a lot of thoughts that go on too. So, you know, again, bringing in a little bit more interaction, but in a structured way, with somebody that you trust, with somebody who knows what you're doing. Perhaps they're engaged in it as well. So I just want to emphasize that it takes practice. And we wouldn't expect to be able to go out and play basketball immediately, you know, in a competitive situation. We would understand the need for practice. So So that's what we're doing here. We need to understand this need for practice, particularly in taking these skills into our daily lives. And as you practice, you know, the sitting meditation is the kind of most structured of the practices, because we are dedicating our time to this observation. We can let go of content. We don't have to worry about planning. We don't have to worry about, I mean, even like washing the dishes, you know, there's some very simple tasks that you need to be thinking about, you know. Put the water in the pan and the soap and the washing them and then rinsing them and then drying them, putting them away. There's just very simple kinds of content that you need to be involved in. So we can't, in our daily lives, completely let go of content. So this this now, I think I can move now into this exploration of, so given that content in our daily lives is an important part of our navigating our daily lives, how do we learn to be mindful while thinking? How do we learn to not get lost in thought? I mean, like when we're washing dishes, you know, thoughts come up about the warmth, about the, you know, the dishes, and then, you know, there's the food on the dishes, and then there's the memory of the food, and then there's the memory of the dinner last night, and then there's the memory of the people we were with, and phew, we're off. So we get lost in unnecessary thought, out of connecting with, or out of the kind of necessary thoughts that happen. So this is a key leaping point for us, that there are kind of necessary thoughts that are happening, and then the mind will just spin into unnecessary thoughts. Some of those may be entertaining, some of those may be make us feel good. And, you know, if you catch yourself thinking a thought like that, you know, there may be a sense of, you know, that particular example I gave, you know, you move from the dishes and the food on the dishes to dinner last night to the friends you were with. Now, it's possible that what you are constructing in your mind is connection and caring and kindness and love. You know, I've noticed this, you know, in my own, you know, thoughts, that there are times when the mind moves into a thinking about friends, and when I come back into the moment, what I'm feeling is that sense of connection, of metta to my friend. Now, I don't at that point say, oh, that's not necessary, but the thoughts themselves, I mean, have been obscuring this feeling. And so at that point, it's like, I'm thinking about these old friends, and I really hope that they're well. You know, taking some moment to actually connect in that way consciously. Yeah, Victor. And use the mic.
But isn't it a bit of a chicken and the egg whether or not the thought engendered the emotion versus the emotion was already there, and without the thought wouldn't have arrived?
Oh, yes, I mean, it varies. I mean, you can actually see, if you're observant, you can see which one comes first. But it will vary. Sometimes the thought comes first. I mean, like that example, you know, washing the dishes, just being with the dishes, there may not particularly be any sense of metta to my friends, but as soon as my friend appears in my mind, there may be that sense of connection that is created because of that thought that arose based on food on the plate. You know, so in that situation, it seems, I mean, this is just an example, you know, but in that situation, it may well be that the thought has engendered the feeling. There are other times when the feelings can be present and they will engender the thoughts.
It seems to me that, for me, it's the thought towards the feeling as opposed to there's a feeling already and then the thoughts arise from, but maybe it's just conditional and different.
Well, observe in your experience. I think many, many times it is a thought that will condition the emotion. But once the emotion is present, there are thoughts that will further condition that emotion. And there are times when it's almost like our mind and body have familiar emotions that they can move into, their grooves. And, you know, it may not be a thought so much. It may be, you know, it's just a pattern that the mind has moved into. Or hormonal thing. I mean, I see this now. I mean, I talk about this now a lot because here I am. I have all these hot flashes, you know. It's like a flush of hormones through the body creates a feeling of something's wrong. And before I really got familiar with this feeling, I was looking around. Well, what is wrong? You know, what's going on here? And so there's the feeling was engendering thoughts. And, you know, there are triggers for hormonal releases, but they're often not thoughts. They're physical situations like, you know, too much heat. So the body can move into emotion without it being triggered by thought. But it is, I think, more the case. I think the way our minds work, it is more often that it's our thoughts that create our reality, create our emotions, our beliefs. It's, you know, keeping track of your thoughts is a really powerful practice. The Buddha said, and it's in this same discourse I was talking about at the beginning. He said, whatever one frequently thinks and ponders, that will become the inclination of your mind. Think and ponder thoughts of frustration, irritation. That's that groove. That's that rut. Think and ponder thoughts of goodwill. We create different patterns in our minds. So we can, recognizing our thoughts. It's really, really powerful. Yeah, Eileen. No, Eileen first, I think, and then John. Okay.
If you're a kinesthetic thinker, is that the emotion that comes first, then the thought?
Well, again, I think it depends. I mean, a kinesthetic thinking, you know, for instance, just to give everybody a sense of what this kinesthetic thinking is, right now, think about standing up. Did some of you get a feeling that went through your body as you did that? That's a kind of a way that, you know, kinesthetic thought manifests. There might also be an image that's associated with it. So, you know, something like that, you know, the thinking, the kinesthetic thoughts can be related to the internal visceral world and can also be related to the neuromuscular world. So I wouldn't say necessarily that if you're a kinesthetic thinker that it's the emotion first. I think it could be either, just as with other.
Okay. How do you deal with thoughts that have strong emotions and they overwhelm you, and then you recognize that, but then they're already there.
So the question, yeah. So you're speaking in daily life or in meditation?
Oh, in daily life.
In daily life, yeah. Okay. You know, this is a place, and this is kind of one piece that I think actually I could do a whole talk on this. So maybe I will actually in a couple of weeks, in a few weeks, come back to this and explore it in more detail. But just for now, I think, again, part of what I was saying is that You know, we will move into overwhelming situations in our daily lives. It's kind of like we've moved into that, you know, that high-level basketball game before we're really ready to pay attention. You know, it's like what we need to do in that situation, there's a couple of pieces. One is to be as aware as you can be. Notice what's obvious about your situation. See if you can ground yourself in non-harming. But, you know, it may be that you basically just move through a situation and then it's after the fact that you even notice that this has happened and you're still overwhelmed by the emotions. If you've got some space and time, you know, if you can be off by yourself, it may be helpful to let yourself feel the emotion in your body. Let's see if you can let go of the thoughts. Again, you know, the thought-emotion cycle is so powerful that thoughts tend to feed emotions, which tend to feed more thoughts, which tend to feed more emotions. So if you can cut the thinking in favor of feeling the emotion in the body, it tends to allow the emotion to run a natural course and to eventually dissipate. If you keep prodding that emotion, you're giving it more juice, more gas, it just tends to keep going. And it, you know, emotions like anger tend to escalate. So you'll find that the thoughts will tend to send certain emotions into a vortex, into a spiral. So in daily life, just use the tools that you have accessible in the moment. Notice what's obvious. Notice what's whether you can behave in a skillful way with non-harming in mind. And get really good at cleaning up the mess. You know, we get into situations where we say things, we do things that come out of this, you know, strong activated emotions, and later on we think, huh, you know, I wish that I hadn't behaved that way. And you know, the part of our challenge is to acknowledge, yeah, that was not so skillful, and to then go back and make amends. So that's another part of our practice, to acknowledge when we've made mistakes, you know, kind of reflect back on it, and then learn how to make amends, how to apologize. So often I found in my own mind when I did something that wasn't so skillful, I would spend a lot of time trying to figure out how I could make it be okay. and you know, so yeah. Just cutting through that and just going, you know, no, that wasn't skillful. I need to do something.
Yeah. Just remember one thing, nothing lasts. It's impermanent. Everything's impermanent.
That's also a really helpful reflection to bring in. Bring in some skillful reflections. You know, the impermanence, that, you know, the suffering of unskillful behavior. This is not me. This is not mine. This is not who I am. You know, bringing in some wisdom definitely can be helpful. And recognize and know that it's a practice, that we need to practice in more structured ways before we can really find ourselves able to meet that kind of situation with mindfulness in our daily lives. It's it takes practice. Yeah. Let me see if there's anything more I want to... there is something more I want to say before we finish. Is it green?
It's red.
No, hit it again. It needs to be green. Hit it again. Hit the button again.
Okay.
There we go.
Yes, there we go.
Hi, I'm Khan. From last week, as I was leaving on the way home, I said, gee, there are two of me, meaning my mind and my body. And I said, well, who's in charge? Because the mind says something and the body acts a certain way. So I said, wait a minute, if we allowed our mind to think a certain way, the body doesn't always agree with the mind. So there's kind of split personality. It was this feeling, I say, wow, who actually observing who? As I sit quietly, I can feel that my mind is really observing my breathing, and then I know that my body behaves a certain way. So suddenly, for the first time, I said, there are two entities in this whole thing, you know. So I said, well, if I actually aware of what the mind is going and where the body is going, if they get together, I think we're probably in a better shape.
Yes. Yes. This is a very crucial recognition, you know, mental processes and physical processes and how they interact. It's understood, actually, that this understanding, this recognition between body and mind is a foundational insight for this practice. So that's wonderful.
So we have split personalities.
Well, they're integrated. I mean, it's more that there are processes, there are mental processes and physical processes, and they interact with each other. It's not like they're separate completely, you know, that they do communicate. And we can actually impact our mind through the way we behave. But it does take a mental connection with that behavior. So last week on the Thursday class, I was talking about intention and giving. That the act of giving is a physical action that we offer. The way that action begins to cultivate beautiful inner qualities is through the intention to cultivate those inner qualities. So we can give a gift, we can give something to somebody, you know, kind of just hoping for something in return, or we can give a gift with the wish that it make them happy and with the wish that it supports a cultivation of generosity in our hearts. So the action in that case then begins to rebound on the mind. Even if we're not feeling generous, if we give with the wish, may this support the cultivation of an open heart, it begins to cultivate that open heart. So the action supports the mind. And I've seen this in my own practice in other ways as well, you know, cultivating patience. I've told this story a lot, you know, that seeing impatience in my mind, noticing how it comes out into the body. And if I recognize that the body is behaving this way, if I can change the behavior so that that mental state doesn't leak out into the behavior and behave in that way with the intention to cultivate patience, not trying to deny that I'm feeling impatient at the moment. That doesn't work. You know, recognizing, yeah, impatience is present, but instead of like, you know, throwing things around, it's like slowing down my movements, being a little more careful about my movements with the intention of cultivating patience. It's amazing how fast the mind changes. So there's a very tight connection between body and mind, and the connection has to do with intention. So I want to say one more thing, and then maybe what I'll do, I'm going to be gone for a couple of weeks and then back, and maybe what I'll do, I had hoped to have some time to practice with you reflecting, thinking mindfully, but we won't have time for that today. But I'd like to just tell you, talk to you about it a little bit, and ways that you can engage with this in your daily life as a practice. Again, you know, this is a practice. So when we find that we are engaged in thought that is necessary and true and kind, which we find a lot, I mean, there are many, many activities that we engage in that we need to think about and reflect on, you know, decisions we need to make. How do I want to, you know, go forward with this thing? Do I want to go this way or that way? We can use our reflective powers to bring up thoughts in our mind and then kind of be present for how those thoughts impact the body. Every thought we think has an impact on us. again, this mind and body interaction, that when we think, I mean, if I ask you to think about being with friends that you really enjoy being with, just in this moment, does it produce any kind of physical response in the body to have that, perhaps a feeling of connection or a little bit of happiness or, you know, something? So when we think thoughts, they generally will produce some kind of a response. And so the practice around thinking mindfully is to stay connected with how thoughts are impacting us. How in the present moment do thoughts impact us? So, for instance, in making a decision, you might take some time to consciously to sit down, let your mind clear for a moment, call up one of the possibilities in your mind and see how that makes you feel. You know, what's the impact of that on your mind and body? And then let that go after a little while of reflecting on that. In the practices for this, it's helpful to keep the thinking to a minimum. You know, bring up a thought and see how it impacts you. Let go of the thought after that point. Just keep reflecting on how that thought has impacted your experience. Over time, you can start tracking the impact on multiple thoughts, on thinking. So, but just to begin, bring up a thought and see how it impacts you. And then, you know, you might, with this decision, let that go and then bring up the other scenario. See how that impacts you. You know, this brings in some other ways to reflect on our situation. It brings in other avenues of wisdom than what's up here in our brains, the way we normally think about things. So this is one way to begin reflecting, thinking mindfully, thinking consciously. Another practice I'll offer you is in reading. You know, in thinking our own internal thoughts, there tends to be we get hooked by our own thoughts. There's some kind of process going on where we are, creating thoughts, and that process tends to have its own momentum, and we get pulled into it. So it gets harder to pay attention to our experience in the moment. If you're reading, the thoughts are coming in from outside. So you don't have so much of that internal generating process going on. So I would like to suggest that pick a time. If you're reading something, reading the newspaper, pick an article in the newspaper and notice as you read it how it impacts you. Stay connected with your experience as you read. So this is, again, a way to begin practicing being mindful of thoughts. And quickly, yeah.
Just a question about reflecting on our experiences with friends or whatever we might decide to do. Do you think it would be helpful to stick with, we all know what, for the most part, what's going to bring positive or negative feelings, bodily emotions and feelings. I'm sure there's a mixed bag with many events, but should we stick with one particular, like if I go to friends and mom or whatever brings up good thoughts, should I stick with those and do those all at the same time or go back and forth?
I would see where your interest lies. So you might be interested in recognizing and cultivating the kind of open-hearted feelings. And you also might be interested in reflecting on or understanding a situation where it was challenging. How did I respond? So if you call up a situation in your mind where something happened that you were charged about, those feelings will come back. You will feel them. And so you can, in that time, take a little bit of mindfulness to learn how to work with those feelings in a controlled situation. Whereas when you were in the situation before, it was kind of happening
in the midst of the game, and you didn't get so much of an opportunity to notice the responses and reactions and how to be with it and how to respond. So, you know, it may be that at sometimes you find that you're interested in exploring something that's a little more challenging. And I would just see where your interest lies. And as I said, maybe next time I'm back, let's practice it. Let's see how it goes to practice it. So thank you all for your engagement.